Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Steve Alton as we are talking about his movie now, Meg, the Meg, and of course the Loch Ness Monster and UFOs. His other book is called Undisclosed. We'll do it all when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Steve Alton with us. Steve, where did they film the Meg? Where was it done?
It was filmed in New Zealand and China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Why did they do that?
Well, in New Zealand, they built themselves an entire outdoor tank. So a lot of the scenes on the water were filmed in the tank.
Okay.
China, the scenes actually took place on a Chinese beach, the attack scenes.
Now, did the creature itself, the Meg, was it a made mechanical shark-type object?
No, it was all CGI.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing what they can do now?
It really is. You're absolutely right. It's amazing.
When you first saw the movie, did it blow you away?
I've only seen the trailers. I haven't seen it yet.
Really?
Yeah, they're saving that for me for the premiere.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Will you be excited?
Well, the trailers are mind-blowing. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but the four trailers that are posted at SteveAlton.com, if you watch them, I love the last one, the one that came right out of China with Jason Statham in the bar. It's a great trailer.
They're the best. Okay, let's go to the phones. We've got Jack in Everett, Washington, first-time caller. Hey, Jack, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to point out that the Casilo ant, that prehistoric fish that was thought to be extinct, was found. And I'm just thinking, since your guest did say only 5% of the ocean and 1% of the deep ocean has been explored, I wouldn't doubt if they still had a population of the megalodon down there.
What do you think of that, Steve? Possible?
Yeah, I've actually mentioned the coelacanth in one of the opening chapters of Meg. The coelacanth was a loathsome fish that dates back millions of years that was thought to be extinct. And lo and behold, they found them in the deep water off of Africa.
And by finding them,
showed that just because it's out of sight doesn't mean it's still not around.
That's right. That's right. And there's so much to explore in the ocean, isn't there? Just so much. You never know. Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Yeah. Hi, Steve. A couple of questions. You know, when you're writing this Meg series, you know, you have the backdrop of the Jaws and stuff like that. How did you create these characters in your mind? How did you pick them? And, you know, what seemed to tickle your imagination as you were creating them? My second question would be along the lines of, do you see, if these things existed, the possible potential of, like almost like a Planet of the Apes, where these sharks could kind of form a group and, you know, go against mankind, almost conquer us. And also check out fat soluble vitamin B1 as a supplement. They're giving that a rave review right now. Instead of water soluble, they have fat soluble B1. You can get it on Amazon, and they're really touting it for a lot of things.
Thank you, Joe. I heard B1 is very good for Parkinson's, so I will take that up. Regarding creating the characters of Meg, with any kind of book that I write, the characters, especially the lead characters, you've always got to have a protagonist and an antagonist, a hero and a villain. And so in Meg, that's what I created, and as I did with The Lock and my other series, too. As far as Megalodon taking over the world like the Planet of the Apes, we're probably safe from that for a while.
Is it a smart creature in the movie?
It's an instinctual creature, and it's armed with a lot of different weapons as far as its senses are concerned. So.
And it's vicious, isn't it?
It gets pissed off, from what I understand.
Steve, you got to watch the language.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, you're killing me. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
You too.
My thoughts on these animals of prehistoric or here lately, did they die out by eating something that they weren't supposed to eat, like something that they couldn't digest? And if so, does an animal of this size, because we don't know about an autopsy, can't get an autopsy, but do they get cancer, these animals? Because my question, I didn't want to ask it because I thought it was between excessively dumb or scathingly brilliant, so you be the judge.
Do they get cancer, huh?
I don't think sharks do get cancer, but if they did, it would be caused by pollutants in the water. And back when Megalodon was around, I don't think that was as much of a problem.
You know, they give shark cartilage for supplements.
Yes, they do. That's true.
And it's very powerful. It work, does a lot of work for the immune system and everything else. So I would guess these sharks can last. Now, in your movie, how old is your Meg?
Well, I think there's actually two. There's a mother and an infant, a juvenile. But I'm not sure how old they are, to be exact.
In reality, how long do you think they could live? 50, 60 years, 100 years?
I'm not sure that long. Maybe 40 or 50 years.
That's still a long time, huh?
It is, yes. And they had no natural enemies, too, so that kind of helped.
All right, Tom's got a text or tweet for you, Steve. What do you have, Tom?
We have something from Carol in Orlando. She says, I love the trailer. I saw it, and I wanted to know if the shark going into the huge glass is CGI. Can Steve answer that for me? And were there any mechanical sharks used in the making of the movie?
Well, he did answer that, Tom, a few seconds ago. He said everything was a CGI. All right, Stephen?
Correct.
Let's go to Carl in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the show. Hey, Carl.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay,
thanks for taking
my friend.
My call.
Thanks.
Hey, great to talk to your guest. Hey, I had a question for him. I grew up near Cleveland, so I wanted to know if he thought anything like a Loch Ness-type monster could be living in any of the Great Lakes or specifically Lake Erie, because I think there have been some sightings and pictures. Now, we don't know if they're, you know, real or a hoax, but there's been several people that claim there's some kind of a sea serpent living in Lake Erie, possibly from the power plants and stuff, all the warm water or maybe radiation, or and I think they call it Bessie. I'm not sure, but I wanted, and I'll take my answer off here, and I'll see you in Nashville, George.
Oh, great. Look forward to it. We'll have some fun there. Well, you know what? Strange pollution could do strange things to creatures, Stephen, huh?
That's true, and eels tend to be a pretty hardy species when it comes to pollutants. That they've been tested to be able to be pretty hardy around this type of contaminants. So if there isn't something in Lake Erie, it could be an eel species as well.
And with these contaminants, could they grow to gigantic proportions?
I'm not sure about that, but they could make them pretty enraged creatures.
Jersey Doug, where is he? He's in New Jersey. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Once again, George, it's a pleasure. Always is.
Thank you.
Yes, I would like to mention to your guest, I've for years been interested in this ever since I was a kid, and I had seen the surgeon's photo of the Loch Ness Monster. I've watched every documentary that I could about it. I was curious, did you ever see the photo? I'm sure you, in your career, you've come across it. There was a very interesting photograph. It was from a Japanese fish trolling ship where they apparently pulled up the rotting carcass of what they claimed to be a sea monster of some sort.
Yeah, that was a great, great
picture. They wouldn't allow them to keep it on the ship because it smelled so bad. They had cut it loose. And then about, I believe it was in the 1800s when they were whaling, there was a group of guys who went out to, you know, when they used to get the whales for the oil, they were butchering a whale. They opened up a sperm whale, and in the body they found what they believed to be some sort of sea creature. They'd never seen nothing like it before. It had a camel's head. They had a photo of it. It was stretched out on several wooden horses and barrels and whatnot. And I was curious if you seen either of the photos. I've seen them both and compared them, and they kind of did look similar in the head and the shoulder areas. But other than that, I couldn't tell much because both of them were in, you know, states of already decomposition. And I just wanted to get your take on that, and I'll listen off the air.
All right, very good. Some of these could be deformities, Stephen, don't they?
Could be deformities. Of course, the surgeon's photo from Loch Ness was, he admitted on his deathbed that it was fake. But I'm not sure about what the ship had dragged out. But they're, you know, they're always discovering new types of species coming from the deep all the time. You know, we just don't have any idea what's really down there.
Well, you know, I was going to say, are there groups of scientists who are doing nothing but looking for, you know, creatures?
Yeah, there are groups of scientists that are exploring the deep waters and coming back with different types of species that we have never found before. In fact, you know, one of the books that we didn't talk about was Vostok, which is the sequel to The Loch. We're in Lake Vostok. They're finding different things. And in the Antarctic lakes, they're finding different type of marine life down there. So that's pretty amazing, too.
Let's go out to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pete's with us on the wildcard line. Hey, Pete, go ahead.
Thank you, George. Steve, very great guest tonight. I was just wondering, when the UFOs flew over your head, did you have an encounter with any aliens or entities shortly afterwards? And do you believe that this could be possibly demons? And since you're so associated with Hollywood, is it controlled by Satanists?
Well, that's an interesting take on all of that. First of all, with the UFO sighting, anything, Stephen?
No, no contact after that. You know, just the amazement and wonderment of these things passing over, which was a privilege to be able to see and experience. And nothing but peaceful feelings from the whole thing.
I don't think Hollywood has got Satanists infiltrating the movies, but I'm sure there are some practitioners out here. What do you think?
Well, I'm not associated with Hollywood, so I don't get out there very often. In fact, I haven't been out there in 15 years, so I'm not sure you'd say I was associated with Hollywood, but I'm sure there's strange people in every walk of life.
Yeah, there sure is. There sure is. Let's go to Anthony in Salem, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Anthony. Thank you for calling.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
Okay, Anthony.
I did see the preview for this movie. I guess they did. I saw a preview. They just redid or remade Deep Blue Sea, the one that they did with LL Cool J. And the trailer, it looked like garbage, so I'm hoping that this one's better. However, my problem is China owns all the Hollywood studios, and every movie you're seeing, and even The Meg, when I saw the preview, you know, the Chinese are the smarter, they save the day. You know,
well,
the
no,
Martian,
Chinese,
demon,
they don't own
the
all the big studios
better than everyone else is. So I'm trying to ask where it's coming from. You know,
all right, but no, you're not right there. The many of the studios are still owned by publicly held companies, shareholders. Yeah, most of them in the United States. Did you feel that kind of influence, Stephen, with this movie?
Well, we're grateful to have Gravity Productions, who is the co-producer on the movie. I mean, they put up the investment for to get the movie done, so it was independently financed. And there are actually more movie theaters in China now than there is in the United States. So certainly from an industry standpoint, the Chinese are getting very involved in entertainment. But
they don't control all the U.S. film houses.
No, nothing like
all.
That. I think this is a positive thing, to be honest.
We've got Jerry, truck driving in Virginia, first-time caller for us. Hi, Jerry, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to say, look, I'm a huge fan. I have the Meg series on audiobooks. They have gotten me many a mile down the road. I'm so geeked out about this movie coming out. I have been waiting. I mean, I guess from the trailer, the only disappointment, it's not an albino shark. And I guess the other question I have, are you going to have a sequel to Vostok, or are you going to have something else coming after that?
So you're a Meg head, aren't you, Jerry?
He is. How about that?
Oh, yes. God, yes.
Well, God bless you, buddy. As far as the sequel to Vostok, which is part of the Lost series, yes, there will be something. I can't say when it's coming out. As far as Meg, have you been listening to Meg Generations? Will be out on audio soon, but the e-book is out, and I hope you got your hardback because they're going to be rarity. And I just appreciate you. And as far as Meg being an albino, what that references, George, is that in the series, the Megs are actually albino because down in the Mariana Trench, a lot of the creatures are albino creatures for hunting reasons. And they couldn't quite do that with the CGI. They tried to make the Meg an albino, but it just didn't
work
enough.
It was too much there. Yeah. We call it white noise when they do stuff like that. So I know a little bit about that stuff. Steve Alton with us. His website is his name, stevealton.com. We're talking about a movie that's coming out called The Meg, based on his Meg series. And Meg is for Megalodon. Is it? How do you pronounce that again, Stephen?
Megalodon.
Megalodon, which is this prehistoric creature, the cousin of the modern-day great white shark. But this one exists. Next up, Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Hello there, George. What a pleasure, buddy. I've got to give a quick shout-out to my buddy Cornelius in Louisiana.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
I know it. I've been listening to your show, and I haven't heard.
I hope he's okay.
That Thomas in La Jolla, Joe and Joe in the Bronx and Long Island. Anyway, George, I was telling Tommy, I used to live on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, Ocracoke Island. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I sure have. I bet you saw a lot of things out there.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's a little museum there, George, and they have got lots of megalodon bones, teeth, skull. They've almost got enough to put together an entire skeleton from different sharks. And it's just very fascinating, and the teeth from it are absolutely fierce, George.
Yeah, I know. Stephen was telling us. Stephen, you familiar with that little museum?
The area there out off the coast of North Carolina and in the Carolina rivers is where they find a lot of megalodon teeth because millions of years ago that was all shallows and ocean access, and the megalodon the whales used to give birth in the lagoons there, and of course the whales attracted the megalodon to attack.
I wonder what would happen if a real one was discovered, Stephen. I mean, well, how would science handle it?
Well, they'd probably put me on a mainstream news show. But it would be pretty amazing.
Is it conceivable?
It's not impossible. Like I said, we just don't know what's down in the deep water. I mean, they'd probably have to net one or net a dead one. Or you see, when sharks die, they don't float. They sink.
Oh, they go right down and decompose.
Yeah, it's not like a whale that has, you know, swim bladder.
Or they get eaten, right?
Or they get eaten, yes.
Does the Meg look like a great white shark, except it's bigger?
Well, the teeth are very similar, so that's how we figured out that they were probably look similar to like a great white.
How would you know the difference if you saw two of them side by side?
Two teeth?
No, the Meg and the great white shark.
Well, the Meg would be the one that's 70 feet and the great white would be 15 feet.
All right, that's the difference. Okay, so they were all pretty big.
They were all very big. Yeah.
All right, stay with us, Steve. We're going to come back and wrap things up with final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Our special guest, Steve Alton. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you need to send me an email, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Steve's website, Steve Alton, ALTEN.com. And welcome back to Coast, Steve Alton with us. We'll get to your calls in just a second. Steve, when you write the novels, do you get into a different state of mind because you're very creative with what you write? How do you get into that state?
It's an interesting question. I'm sure it's something that you shared as a novelist yourself. You sort of put yourself in the character's position and sort of lose yourself in the story.
I know Rod Serling, when he used to write his Twilight Zone episodes, would sometimes just float in his pool with a dictaphone machine, and he'd just read the script into the little dictaphone, and his secretary would transcribe it, and he'd have his show that way. Everybody has a different technique.
Yeah, I've never tried that.
How long does it take you to write a book?
The Meg series, as I'm so familiar with it at this point, probably about 8 months, although Generations took a little bit longer, and with another, like The Shell Game or Grim Reaper End of Days, that could take as long as 2 years. I mean,
wow.
Which seems a crazy task, and you never start out that way, but it just takes so much research goes into my work that it takes me a lot longer than a lot of novelists.
I watched the fourth trailer you were talking about during the break, and you're right, it is pretty spectacular. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Wayne, go ahead. You're on with us.
Good evening, Sir George.
Hey, Wayne.
Steve. Hey, I wanted to talk about the age of the shark, and I'm not a young earther or an old earther, even though the logs that came down when Mount St. Helens went off 10 years later were found to be petrified. So, anyway, getting back to the shark, have you heard of the Greenland shark at all, Steve?
What's the name of that, Wayne?
The Greenland shark.
Greenland shark from Greenland. Go ahead, Steve.
The six-gilled shark up in Greenland, I believe, in the cold temperatures.
What about this shark, Wayne?
Right. Well, they're very slow. They live in very cold waters, and they can go down to 9,000 feet in depth, where it would be very, very cold. And they live to be an estimated average, median average of 312 to 372 years, and they believe they might have found one 512 years old.
Jeez.
So these big guys, I think, might even be older than, a lot older than you think.
That's exciting. Thanks, Wayne. I like 500-year-old shark, Steve. What do you think?
It's pretty amazing. I hadn't heard that, but that's some lifespan.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's I guess living in that cold water, you know, everything slows down.
It's like Methuselah, but he's a shark.
Yeah.
You never know. You just never know. So when this movie comes out, which is August 10th, I believe?
Yes.
And all of a sudden it's a great hit. Great success. It'll probably make its way to Amazon and Netflix after that and everything else. Sequel to The Meg. What do you think?
Well, that would be great. There are six books in the series and more being written, and so there's plenty of material that keeps things fresh.
Would you try to use the same talent?
Well, it's not up to me, but I would hope that they would, yeah. I mean, Jason Statham's is perfect for this role, and the supporting cast is terrific.
Were you on the scene at all when they shot this?
I was invited. I didn't go. It's kind of a long trip for me, but my daughter went to China, and they used her as an extra in the movie.
Did you have a good time?
Yes, she did.
You could tell it was good. And Jason, just from the trailer, he's all business in this movie, isn't he?
Yeah, he's your Hollywood tough guy. I mean, he's great for the role.
That is truly remarkable. So in terms of the books, where can people get them now?
Well, we have an anniversary edition, the 20th anniversary hardback. There's only 1,500 in print and only 800 left. And any of your fans who order tonight will get a Meg Tooth fragment with the book, which is actually worth three or four times what the book is worth. And that's as a gift for contributing to... because we're using the proceeds to help the Adopt an Author Reading Program, which is a nonprofit.
Oh, that's great. That's good. Well, I wish you the greatest success, Steve, with this movie. When it comes out, it's exciting. Like I told you, I'll probably be in St. Louis at this time, but if it ever hits that way, I'd love to go see it.
Yeah, it should be in St. Louis. There's no problem there, but thank you very much.
Okay, my friend. Steve Alton, website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And... what a great, prolific writer. But, I mean, look at the trailer. Just go to his website and look at the trailer. He's got four of them, and they're all pretty darn spectacular. I want to wrap up the show tonight by talking about something pretty interesting. It was a gift from my staff to me a long time ago. You all know our scientist friend, Morgus the Magnificent. Well, he made a little impromptu trip to me, which I didn't know about. And it turned out to be one of the strangest moments I've ever had. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi.
What door? That door there?
Hello.
Hello. Hello, George.
Morgus.
George Morgus in New Orleans.
How are you?
Oh, George, am I glad to get to you.
My
God. You know, our telephones were all down through the hurricane, and, of course, we've got it all fixed up now, and I'm really, really moving along with this lab now, George.
Oh, so thank God. You know, we talked to you briefly after Katrina, but your phone went out, and we didn't know what happened to you. So you're okay, and your family's okay?
Oh, George, listen, everybody, Chopsley's right here, Dr. Chopsley's here, and Eric, everybody's in good shape here. You know, George, we did evacuate over there, because I'll tell you why. The city, you know, had a mandatory evacuation, but there's no way I would ever leave this lab, George. You know what's in here.
What is there?
Oh, you know, George, come on, you know, some secret stuff we talked about. And granted, you know, everybody would like to get in here. This is why we've got to stay here and protect it. I tell you, no, and besides, I'm probably the only building in New Orleans that had electricity and utilities 24/7, you know.
Well, I'm glad they're rebuilding. I'm glad you're rebuilding. And now you were in the city ice house, right?
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Well, which one, George? What was that?
Weren't you in the ice house?
Well, absolutely. You know, this has been here about 200 years. It was an old tanning factory. It used to have alligator skins and muskrats, you know. But back in the late 1800s, it became one of the first ice houses in the South. And, of course, we got a hold of it in the 50s here. You were in Detroit at that time.
Yes. And then, watching you on television.
That's right, sir. Listen, this was fantastic. Imagine us about 50 getting together. But, George, listen, I've got something. Why I called you is, you don't know it, but I need that audience of yours to know what we're doing here in New Orleans. George, I've come up with something. You know, I've been working with, you know, all kind of microbiology. I've been working with all of the molecular designs for new inventions. And now I've got something, George, that's just going to break your heart. We have, right here in the lab, George, I was working with subatomic particles, and get this, George.
What did you uncover?
Listen, I have moved solid molecules across this building. George, I have moved myself with solid molecules through this machine. Chopsley, get away from the machine. I have moved myself out of this room where I am now into a room down the hallway. Electronically, George.
You telep-
I just wanted your people there to know that I could do this. Chopsley, get away from the knife yet. Boy, all right, Chopsley. Let's do it for George here. Don't press that button. Press the other button. Press it. Go ahead. That's it.
What's going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. I'm in your studio, George.
I'm in your studio now, George.
The real Morgus is here. Get over here.
How did you
do that?
I tell you, George, this has been a thrill.
You guys were in on this.
The whole bunch were in on this, George. Let me tell you, you had Tom, you had Steve, you had Lisa, you had Craig Kitchen, you had Trevor, Oliver, and the whole gang in this building. They love you, George.
This is incredible.
They brought me here in a company jet.
Are you kidding me?
Absolutely. Private jet all the way here, George.
They've never flown me in the company jet.
They haven't shown you the company jet, have they?
No, not at all.
Well, you don't want to, George. They stopped in Tijuana with me. I mean, it was wonderful. But they did it all for you, George. You know why? Because they knew you were going to be leaving for Christmas.
Yes.
And they wanted to give you a little Christmas early and a surprise they thought you might appreciate. Friend from Detroit come here
gift.
45 years later to see you again.
This is incredible.
You
talk about surprise. What are the odds of coming up with a surprise hotline?
These guys
I had
did it.
No idea.
These guys did it, you know what? And I tell you what, I was going to bring something here for them, but the transformation, of course, was just incredible. Just coming here like this, and of course, your audience knows that we just pulled a little trick on you here, that I really didn't transport myself like that.
I've got to tell you, we have such heavy security, and to see you come bolting into the studio kind of shocked the heck out of me.
Well, George, have I changed?
Actually, you look younger.
I don't. Oh, my gosh, no wonder. Well, that must be the new treatment I'm on. But, George, I tell you what, just being here and seeing the studio you guys work out of is really something incredible.
It's a little different than the ice house, isn't it?
Well, I tell you, that's for sure thing, and I'm sure the rent is a little higher, too. George.
What do you think?
Well, let me put it this way. If I could get everyone listening to this program to get on the same level I am on, and I know this sounds like braggadocio to some people, but, you know, take it as it will. But friends, I can guarantee you, you can use the mind to do wonderful things. George, you more than anyone know the psychokinesis thing, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, guys, I tell you what, you know the astronaut Edgar Mitchell?
I know him real well. He's been on the program several times.
Oh, really?
Dear friend.
Well, has he talked about this?
Yes, he has.
Well, I'll tell you that. You know,
wonderful guy.
You know that the mind has unbelievable potential. And I can tell you right now, you know, if you were smart, George, really smart, if you were up in my level, now I'm not putting you down. I'm not putting you down, George, but listen to this. And I want these people
not
to hear
many
this.
People are up to your level.
Well, intellectually.
As much as we might try.
Well, intellectually, I've got to say that because I've got to let them know that there's a chance for everyone to get up there with me, friends. You see, when you're my... What do you admire, intellect? You cannot do violent things. When you go back the years, well, we're going back to the hominins. You know what a hominin is, you know?
Yeah.
We're talking about people that lived 18 million years ago. They were throwing rocks at each other. And what are they doing over here in France tonight?
They're still throwing rocks.
George, an intelligent person like myself wouldn't do that. If a mugger came up to me right now and said, fella, I'm going to give it to you in the face, you know what? He couldn't hurt me, George. He could not hurt me. You know why?
Why?
I have mind control, George. I can control his mind. I can stop him in his tracks. Now, George, you're going to witness this. You know I'm in your studio tonight.
Yes, you are.
I'm going to do it. Before we leave, I want you to come up to me and you try to take a punch at me.
I can't take a swing at you. And I mean, I know you want me to, and you think you can stop my arm in mid-motion, but...
Well, I could do it, George. You know, it's you have to put yourself in a, well, what we call a precognition mode. What we're doing is we're going into abilities, just like you have telepathy or we have clairvoyance. I have mind control. And once you put this precognition state into your body, which I can do just like snapping a finger, it's amazing what happens, George, with the mind being able to control. It's like putting waves through the air. You won't feel it until you try to hit me. And then you stop. You can't do it. I'm walking up to you right now. Now, look, don't get frightened now. You're my buddy. Nothing's going to happen to me.
Okay.
Nothing's going to happen to me. All right.
I would kick myself for the rest of my life.
I want you to give me the best you've got, George. Okay? Swing back. You ready? One, two. Put it right here against the cheek. Go ahead. Go ahead, hit it. Go ahead.
You ready?
Ready. Go ahead.
Oh, gosh.
Well, George. Oh, well, that didn't hurt at all. You have a handkerchief?
Unbelievable.
Oh, God. This is embarrassing. You
assured me.
Yeah, what? Well,
this would work.
You know, George, I'm in a different atmosphere around here. This place, you know, you've got black walls, you've got kind of Craig lights. I mean, why do you have it moody in here?
I feel so rotten.
Oh, gosh.
You okay?
I'm okay. I think my tooth, I only have four teeth, George. I think you loosened one of them.
Well, why did you?
Don't worry about it, George. We're still friends forever. Don't worry about it. I'll fix it, George. Boy. Well, anyway,
every experiment you do, George, something goes wrong.
George, I think it's the lighting in here. I honestly believe it is. This is embarrassing, and I know people will fall out of love for me, but I tell you, friends, it has a great deal to do.
I just want to make sure you're okay.
Oh, I'm perfectly fine, George. No, everything's fine.
Not that you have many teeth left anyway.
Everything's fine. No, all four of them are okay. But nonetheless, it's such a surprise to, you know, have the opportunity to try something in front of the whole world here and have a little discrepancy take place.
Millions of listeners.
Oh, listen, I
maybe
I
more
don't
than
hold
your
it again.
TV show.
Well, I would not hold this against you, George, and I hope people that heard this will just... In fact, you know what? I can make them forget it, George. I have the...
No more experiments.
No, but I don't want them to remember this tomorrow.
No, they may forget everything, and we don't want that to happen.
May permeate the whole show.
That could be. Nothing like Marcus. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.